That was the last of the big plungers, Mr. Albert Thornton Gray, playing the St. Louis Blues with a band that features Arnett Cobb on tenor and Ray Bryant on piano. We'll meet Al Gray in a few moments. At 4 o'clock today, I'll speak with Ray Fielding, who is an expert on film special effects and has worked with Francis Ford Coppola for the last few years as a technical consultant on films like Apocalypse Now, The Black Stallion, The Outsiders, and One from the Heart. He also heads a subsidiary corporation, Zoetrope Images, which provides special visual effects to Zoetrope film projects. Every Wednesday at about 3:40, we hear from rock reviewer Ken Tucker. Today from Ken Tucker and his Hearing Secret Harmonies archives, a review of a recent Alex Chilton recording. Right now, it's a great pleasure to welcome my first guest, Al Gray. He was born in a little town of Aldie, Virginia, but he moved with his family to Pottstown, PA, where he grew up. His early jazz playing includes work with the big bands of Benny Carter, Jimmy Lunsford, Lionel Hampton, and Dizzy Gillespie. For 20 years, Al Gray toured and was a featured soloist with the Count Basie Band, visiting all over the United States and the rest of the world. He also recorded with many great vocalists, including Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Sarah Vaughan, and Bing Crosby. This weekend, Al Gray will be leading his own all-star band at the Sunnybrook All-Star Jazz Festival in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. The band includes fellow trombonist Irby Green, Al Cohn on tenor, and drummer Bobby Durham. That performance will be on Saturday night at 8 p.m. in the Sunnybrook Ballroom. By the way, during the festival, which begins Friday night with Count Basie, Al Gray will receive the first annual Sunnybrook Achievement Award from the mayor of his hometown, Pottstown, Mayor Ed Jameson. For more information on the concert and on the festival this weekend, you can call 326-6400. That's 326-6400. Well, congratulations on your award, Al, and it's nice to see you on Fresh Air.
Well, this is very much of a happiness to hear something like that. As first time me to be aware that I would be receiving an award, and that's really marvelous.
You didn't know about the award until...
They told me that it was going to be a salute to me, but the Achievement Award for any jazz artist is really, you know, because I have received several, and to come from hometown, it is really very much of a warm feeling. Because most jazz artists, when they go to their hometown and everything, everyone knows them, but that's about it. And so that's why all jazz artists always have to leave home and go elsewhere to become known before they can come back home and maybe be recognized.
Well, I guess I have some journalistic privilege here about knowing about your award before you do, because I have a press release here that says for immediate release, and that says you will get the first annual Sunnybrook Achievement Award during
that. That's marvelous. That's
so wonderful. Congratulations. Well, let's talk about your days with Basie. You were a featured soloist, the trombonist with the Basie Band and a featured soloist. And,
well, we're going to start right there, you know. Since I do have quite a legacy in the music world, when I first joined Count Basie, in fact, it was right here from Philadelphia. And how I joined Count Basie was that I happened to go to see him one night at Pep's Show Bar, which is located at South and Broad Street. And that's where Count Basie would come. And I was still playing with Dizzy Gillespie at the time. But we were about to break up the band, Dizzy was. And so anyway, when I got there, Tom McIntosh, who is very famous as a writer in movies and television in Hollywood today, trombonist, was playing with the band, and he was ill that night. And so Count Basie really didn't even know my name, although he knew that I was a trombone player. And he just made a action with his arm like a trombone was sliding. And I saw that was a trombone player missing. And I lived on the north side, and I went from South Philadelphia before I hit to North Philadelphia and got my horn and came back. And really, I played so much trombone that night.
Did you just...
Count Basie said, when it finished that night, Basie said, "You got the job." And Next couple of days after that, I spent time trying to get a passport because we were leaving in 3 days to go to play for the Queen in England. And I had never left the country before, and I had to get a passport, so I had to go to Washington, D.C. And in the meantime, Count Basie was recording the next day in New York. And so it was just hung me up every kind of way, making a recording date. But then they fixed it that after I got to Washington that I could receive the passport in New York.
Was this, what, around 1957 or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when did you become the featured soloist with the band? Was that pretty much immediate?
No, it wasn't. Just like I say, after I had been a soloist and everything with Dizzy Gillespie and all like that, which sort of like gained fame from the Newport Jazz Festival, which is a famous record today, Cool Breeze. But there was no arrangements. See, this was so sudden for me to join Count Basie. There were no solo arrangements for Al Gray, and everything runs in uniform like that with Count Basie.
I mean, it's not just a chance for during these 16 bars.
No, it just shook me up no end because we went to Europe and there was no music, and so I just played what was designated, that what was planned for that European trip. And then after a month and a half in Europe and everything like that, we came back to the United States. And then Thad Jones and Frank West, and next thing I know, many arrangers started writing for me. And so then I became a feature. But it was a period of time, approximately 7 or 8 months.
Well, what did you like most about being the featured soloist?
Well, I mean, after you become a featured soloist, you feel as though you still don't get enough. That's what happens. And so there it is, because you have 16 great artists, you see, and each and every one wants to perform. So how can you put them on? This is what has been becoming very much of a hardship for like me and then other artists. For instance, like when they say, okay, for the Newport Jazz Festival, we put together a Count Basie alumni. Well, you still have every one of those stars, you see? And so, therefore, it's just but so much time. And it becomes a problem sometimes where one may not be able to even as much as get on a concert or something like that.
Is it the type of thing where the next cat might be waiting to take your chair if you're not blowing up to your best?
Well, I mean, it was always that way. It was always a challenge for, this is the only way you can get into the awards. Otherwise, it's just like baseball, football. You have to sort of like prove that you can really manipulate with your instrument.
Could you just go out and blow as long as you wanted, or would you have to be looking out of the back of your eye for a cue from Count to get back into your seat?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, you always sort of like felt when you have played enough and everything, because, again, see, Count Basie is just one of those type of leaders that he can sense and feel you and guide you. And, like, for instance, like, being there for as many years that I was there and everything, you automatically find out all types of feelings. Like when he's going to start a number, he could hit a couple of fingers on the piano and I know what number it was. But you'd have to be there for over a year to recognize or know. And then through the years, many of the musicians, you know, went on to other jobs and everything like that, but where I remained for many years, I knew all the numbers in the book and could be very much for advancement for any other artist that came into the band. For instance, like Butch Miles, the drummer who came into the band. Well, there was no drum book. I'd, you know, taught him for like 3 years till he got ready to leave. And so this is the way it was happening in Basie's band, because he let the band be itself. He was the leader, and you knew that. And so Freddie Green with the guitar guidance, and you always had to listen to whoever was beside you. Otherwise, you were playing too loud, or you weren't developing into what his frame of a big band should be, and the reason he still remains on top today.
You gotta have spent a lot of time with these guys, having played for 20 years and doing all this touring, and I imagine being either on a bus or a train or a plane or in a hotel room with the orchestra. Did you get close to anybody in particular throughout those 20 years?
Oh, yes, you really do. I mean, because, like I'm saying again, you've sort of like become a family out there. It's back in those days, you see, because like you're saying, buses and everything today is planes. But I remember times where we'd be on hills and the bus couldn't get up the hill. You'd have to get out of the bus and help to push the bus up the hill. And then it used to be where you had no heat on the bus, and you'd take newspaper and put it around your body and put your clothes back on so the air wouldn't go through and all kinds of things like that. Whereas today, for instance, now coming up, I'm leaving for Amsterdam, Holland on the 11th of August, and we'll be back in the United States on the 14th that afternoon, and we'll play in Baltimore, Maryland that night for the Cool Jazz Festival in Baltimore. So it doesn't, today it's different of travel. Although coming in from Nice just last week or so, we did have a little emergency in a landing where we almost ran out of fuel. And so we had to land in Bratton, Connecticut, and then refuel and come go into New York. Which we had all the greatest musicians in the world on there.
Who was on the flight?
Like Lalo Hampton and his band, and Illinois Jacket, and Major Holly, Jay McShann. You just can go on. I could be on for a half hour naming all the famous artists that was on that flight. But this is what happens, you know. Shelly Man, I just would just go on, you know.
Well, I guess there are a lot of people saying their thanks now that...
Yeah, well, I mean, just like I say, when it's your turn, it's your turn anyway.
When you were touring with Basie in Europe or throughout the United States, did you ever have a chance to figure that you were living first class? You know, like you have you have a train car that you travel in or get first class accommodation in some European hotel. Was that part of the life too?
Well, years ago, like when I played back with Jimmy Lunsford, seemed like my first band was Benny Carter. And then Jimmy Lunsford, well, we used to have trains that we'd have like a Pullman coach. And like if we played in Philadelphia tonight, they'd take that Pullman coach off that night and put it on the sideline of a track. And the next morning when we'd be leaving, they'd hook it up to the breakfast car and we'd get breakfast from that way, which was really nice. But then the train situation came up. And it changed it all. And but that was like because we had much problems back in those days too. Like if we had a tour of the South, you just couldn't stay in the hotels and all like that. And everyone knows about those conditions, so it's, you know, there's no need to you know, bring it up again. But that's so happened, you see. And so. By traveling that way with the train, that at least still made it that you were still private. I wouldn't say first class, but at least private.
Well, we don't have to get into this too deeply, but I would be interested in hearing how much experiences of racial segregation affected the Basie band and perhaps when you noticed that it was changing or if that was ever an issue with the musicians about where you would prefer not to go because of racial discrimination.
Well, I mean, incidents, you know, would occur and everything. And that meant, you know, all everywhere. Even here, I could even mention even an incident like in Philadelphia. But however, events would happen to where things would, like in Las Vegas, we used to have battle bands out there, Harry James, Count Basie, you know, and the band wasn't allowed, like, out in the audience until the Crosby Boys changed it because they said, you know, we wouldn't have the Basie band drinking champagne in the basement, you see. there was Pearl Bailey, which in the Golden Room back there. They couldn't. Many things existed years ago, but all those things have changed. And so guys like me, we just say, well, that's something that we have experienced, and what a world now has, you know, changed many things, and it's wonderful. So I feel as though that I'm one of the troopers out here, and I'm traveling all over the world. It's just like it is. And once you have left this country and experienced other countries, that really lets you know how you want to live in your country. And I love this country very much.
How do you think jazz is looked at in Europe compared to how it is in your home country?
Yeah, well, just well, since jazz is our only creative art form of our United States, this means that we are still catching up in many ways. Why? Because like the instruments, they come from Europe. That's where we have to go back and start, like your instruments, like the trumpets and all these, you know, the symphonies and various different, but the rhythms and things, they come from your congas and everything from Africa. So there's where your rhythms were formed. And so by the boats coming up the Mississippi and the Marlborough boats and all like this that they had, and traveling into New Orleans, and the jazz started. And he was getting it on the docks there, and the next thing it took on and moved into Chicago and went everywhere all over the world. So now the European people, they noticed that, and so they had looked into it, and so they had been listening to it. Oh, look, here's what's coming from America. But we never even realized it or noticed it here in our country. But when you go into those foreign countries, I've done many recording that I didn't even know what the titles and things were, where they would pull out books and show me. For instance, like I had passed in a lifetime many years where they had records out with the Chocolate Dandies that I had recorded with Benny Carter, which had Sid Catlett and Buck Clayton and Ben Webster and these guys and things way back there. But I found out many years later, this was titles put on later and everything, and had never heard recordings until I went to Europe. First time I'd heard this recording was like in Europe. And so this is what makes you sort of aware.
And actually, the recording that we opened up with today was recorded in Europe, was recorded in Nice, right? In Nice.
Oh, yeah. The one we opened with St. Louis Blues, yeah, that was recorded right in the gardens where we still play in Nice, right in the gardens right there.
What's it like?
Oh, it's really a beautiful, happy feeling because it is the gardens, and the atmosphere is so beautiful where they have the theater outside.
Do you have favorite spots around the world that you really, really like going back to play?
Oh, yes, very many. For instance, like my partner Buddy Tate and I, like we play at the Tivoli Gardens, like in Copenhagen, and we play like in the gardens in the Nice every year, and we love that. And like we play in Disney World here in the United States, and New Orleans at the Elhurst Bourbon Street clubs. I'm working all over the world, but again, for sound, like Carnegie Hall is one of the greatest sounds that you could ever play in, so you have to really appreciate that. Although in Europe, many concert halls are really, really great too.
It just occurred to me that when you mentioned Buddy Tate's name, that's a good example of somebody that you've probably known for a real long time and you've played with for a real long time. And I'm just wondering if like you ever get together somebody like Buddy Tate or Lionel Hampton or Count Basie and just sort of talk about how your life has changed over the years, how you've changed your lifestyle, family matters, that type of thing.
Well, you see, by us being around each other all the time, which, in fact, just leaving Lionel Hampton on this tour and seeing, eating with him and all like that, because when you're playing in the gardens in Nice, you have three different band stages, you see, where there's music going on three different places at the same time. And so here's the Fats Domino, and he's on with blues over here. And Lionel Hampton or Woody Herman's on this stage, you see. And so they have a cuisine where you have the New Orleans food. And they come over from New Orleans and they fix this food just like they do back there, the jambalaya and the red beans and rice and all like this. And so everybody eats out there and it's all outdoors. And George Ween's wife runs this, Joyce. And the food is really great. And you see all the artists, that's where we get them, we have a chance. And so, especially when you have one of your friends in a 6 month or a year like that, and some that I saw this past year had been like 20, 30 years and all like that.
When you haven't seen somebody for 20, 30 years, are you surprised by the change?
You better believe you are. You really are. And you find, you know, whether you have really completely deteriorated or are you still living.
Do you talk about things that you don't do anymore, like, I don't know, drinking or eating or whatever?
Well, for instance, like me, yeah, where I used to smoke and drink a lot. Maybe not that much, but I used to drink and smoke. Well, now I don't. Which is no-no for as doctors said, you know. And so he said drinking and everything would automatically create me high blood pressure. And so I had to do away with that. And so this is what happens in a lifetime, which I'm very happy that I stopped, because it has enabled me to know that I can play better too, you see. And so all this is... Especially now when you're out here like a duo coming from a big band, you really have to produce.
You mean you and Buddy Tate.
Right, see? And see, that's another thing, like we were talking at the beginning of the show, being with a big band and to get solos and everything. When you get a solo, you only still maybe play, if you play four courses, if you haven't played a lot of courses, normally it's two. And then if you get three courses, then that's pretty good. But if you get four, boy, Basie might stick his finger up sometimes and say, one more. And what it meant that perhaps he could see in you that you could get up a little bit further in climax of your solo. And so he'll let it, you know, accelerate that way. And so this is what makes a great band leader like Count Basie. And that's why he is so admired. And that's why all the singers want to sing with his band, because he knows what to do for the singer.
Let me reintroduce you, Al, for people just joining us. Speaking with Al Gray, who is probably know a trombonist. He played for many years as a featured soloist with the Count Basie Orchestra. He's worked for many years leading his own bands and playing with people like Jay McShann and Milt Hinton and Buddy Tate. And this weekend will be leading his all-star band, which this time around will include players like Irby Green and Bobby Durham and Al Cohn. And that'll be part of the Sunnybrook Jazz Festival, which is this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Sunnybrook near Pottstown, PA. Al Gray will be playing Saturday night. And here's a telephone number for more information on the concert. You can call 326-6400. And by the way, as part of the festival, Al Gray will be awarded the first annual Sunnybrook Achievement Award by the mayor of his hometown, Pottstown, Ed Jameson. Let's go back a bit. And I'm wondering why you picked the trombone, or how you picked the trombone for your instrument.
Well, coming from Pottstown and everything like that, we didn't have any money. And my father was a musician, and I was always fooling around with his horn. And so he thought maybe something would happen. And so I'm like from a musical family, which I have a brother that played clarinet in school, and I have a sister that played trumpet. And so my father, Richard Gray, we played in the church and everything. And then in Pottstown, we played at block parties and things like, you know, the block off the streets and the music. We'd furnish the music. Or if it was a Memorial Day parade or something, we... played, but this was more in the playing military music, you know, marches and everything like that. It didn't consist of any jazz.
What did you play in church? Was that from the hymnal or something like that?
Well, I mean, it would play What a Friend We Have in Jesus and all these kind of tunes, you know, that exist in the Second Baptist or the First Baptist, period. you know, which I find traveling throughout the world is a lot of it's all the same, but it just has different titles. But some are different.
Did your parents want you to become a musician, or did they want you to have the security of a different type of job?
Well, my father was a musician, and he looked at it that, yes, he wanted one of us in the family to turn out to be pretty good, because...
What does that mean? I mean, to have a...
all of us was playing, my sister, and my brother, my Dickie Jr., in which my sister, she still plays, but she plays the organ now, and she plays very often in various different events for church. And we have in the family singers and all like this. And so we just like from a musical family. And so this is what has happened from Pottstown, where I had an opportunity to go to a very good school where they had good musical people like Andrew Freck and Naomi Levengood and Harvey Leroy Wilson, who was a professor here in the University of Pennsylvania. And so all these different things like that. And then to have... musicians that wanted to play, like a gentleman that's going to be on this performance this Saturday, Arlen Saylor, who has the Philadelphia Eagles passion and all. He was the first one that let me play jazz on halftime at the Eagles with Al Hirschman from New Orleans, Louisiana Saints and all like this. So, you see, so jazz is not just coming up. It's been around. It was just a little small town that had it, where many times in the big cities, they don't get it. And we had little dance bands around Pottstown then, where we'd play for the proms in high school, junior high school, and all like that, the high school.
Who'd you listen to at that point when you started getting interested in jazz?
Well, it's where I'm playing this Saturday, which I wanted to play all my life, and this will be the first time to play on my own there, at Sunnybrook. See, they've been having big bands come to Sunnybrook since 1931. And when I was a little kid coming along, they say, Louis Armstrong's going to play down at Sunnybrook, boy. And I would get down there, man, and they had a place where it had a hole in the back of the bandstand. You know, I could hear the band just as clear as if he was in the ballroom. And, of course, tell the security come along, chase you away. Because they think you're getting ready to steal something, but that was the music.
I'm wondering, then how did you make the break from leaving Pottstown to getting on the road and playing with bands? What was your first break like that?
Well, it came along an opportunity to enlist in the Navy because I was going to be drafted into the Army, so I felt as though I wanted to go. And so I had to audition for music in the Navy, and so I became a bugler. In boot training, where I was the head of the buglers and had a bugle and drum corps at Camp Moffett out in Great Lakes. And then I was shipped out to Hingham, Massachusetts, and then Gros Isle Naval Air Station in Michigan. And within that time, I came into Detroit, and I used to go out jamming in all these different places. I used to go in jamming in Boston and used to jam with a lot of the great musicians. And then Chicago, you'd go into Chicago, and you had all the famous musicians. And so in Detroit, I was getting out of the service, and there was Benny Carter there. And he was playing the Paradise Theater in Detroit, Michigan. And J.J. Johnson, one of the Furwell's great trombone players, J.J. Johnson, was leaving the band. And Benny Carter needed a trombone player. And he took me on. He put me in the union and everything in Detroit, Michigan. I still have the card today, which I'm a 30-year member now.
Has that
Local 5.
Has that been good for you? Because I know musicians, there's a split of opinion.
It's been great for me because... they have helped me through the years, and now it's credit, you know, union and all like this, and insurance. In fact, one of about the highest in the country, although I still belong here to Philadelphia, too, you see.
This is jumping around in subjects a little bit, but I'm wondering what makes a good plunger for, you know, for the plunging sound and trombone. Is it the same type you'd buy in a hardware store, or is it a special plunger?
Yes, similar. I mean, or just from the toilet, the plunger. But you'd have to have the correct diameter, which is needed.
I mean, is there something when you know it feels right, like the feel in your hand or the
yes.
feel of rubber? Do you have, like, favorite plungers?
All of that. No, but now I have invented one that is even better because it's a ring plunger where, for the youngsters, they can control it and hold it better. It has a ring on the plunger, and it has been developed and everything by Humes and Berg for me, and this is my creation. Plus, I have a book out telling you how to play the plunger, which is published by Humes and Berg Factory. In fact, I even brought you along some positions and other things for you just to look over, because that's another thing about jazz. Years ago, we didn't have jazz in schools to be studied and everything. Now, we have many jazz classes and everything. And so when Tricky Sam and guys came along like that, Bubba Mollis and everything, Tricky Sam wouldn't show no one. Because I knew about it, but then just recently I was selected to the International Trombone Association, which doesn't involve jazz. That means that's what it is.
So you're one of the few faculty members of that association that teaches jazz.
That's correct.
Right.
You see? And so they had this at Belmont College, which is a religious college in Nashville, Tennessee, this past year.
Did you figure that in talking to a group of musicians who are mostly coming from a classical background that they could learn from you, from your jazz background?
Well, I had success where many of the students just wanted to attend my class, and some of them even had other classes that they bypassed to come back to my class again. So that made me feel really good about that. Why? Because you have trombone players from all over the world, just like it is, and they're there to teach you techniques and so on and so forth about the instrument, period. And so I was selected to the faculty this past year. And this is what I taught was the plunger, and they found out many a different effect that you could find from the plunger. And that was another happy experience for me.
Well, we're just about out of time, but before you go, I really want to ask you about a recent gig that you did at the White House with Lionel Hampton. What was the occasion for that?
Well, Lionel Hampton, you know, he's one of the all-time great Republicans, you see. And so he campaigned very strenuously and everything like that for Mr. Ronald Reagan, okay? And due to this, through the success and everything, Lionel was invited for a nice little afternoon party at the White House. And so Al Gray was invited guest, being one of the world's great trombone players, to let the president know that jazz is really hot out here.
Did you want to say anything to the president while you were there? How did you like being there, and did you want to talk to him?
Oh, well, I mean, the president really enjoyed the afternoon, come up and wanted an encore. And so you can imagine what broke loose with all security, how you have to really, you know, because we was designated to play exactly 1 hour, 5, and cut it right off on 6. But then after Lionel Hampton to do an encore, wow, you know.
Did you feel that the people were watching you, like with the Secret Service checking out the new faces?
Well, you didn't see this or feel this until exactly at 6, and then you were like surrounded. And so that which we then proceeded into the White House. See, this was on the lawn. Then we proceeded into the White House, where we greeted by handshake the president and Mrs. Reagan, which this had to be done in two different rooms, you see, where you get in line, and I wear hats and everything, and so I had on a hat that day, and she admired my hat. Mrs. Reagan admired a hat I had on. And then I shook the president's hand after that, and we were shown around in, you know, the Oval Room like that.
Did you, or do you think any of the other players in the band want to give any messages to the president, or was the understanding politics was strictly off base for the afternoon?
Well, you see, first of all, when you're in line and someone is in the back of you waiting just to shake the president's head, I mean,
it's not the time or place.
No, not the time or place, and it would be discourteous to the one that's in back of you. Less more who's in front of you in the first place.
Well, I want to thank you for being here today. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you, and I wish you the best of luck on your gig this weekend. Can you tell us who you're playing with?
Oh, yes. It's like I said, that wasn't all. My son is going to be playing with me this week. Michael Gray and Don Patterson, Johnny Cole, Joe Newman. See, you just gave a few of them. There's Lee Shaw and Joe Sutler and Arlen Sailor's Big Band is going to be with us this week. And as we did mention Al Cohen. But it's an honor to have all these great musicians to come up and play for an event that, as you say, who knows about Pottstown? Because I did one of the national broadcasts back last year in November. And that's what the announcer said. Al Gray from Pottstown. Where is Pottstown?
Well, Pottstown is in Pennsylvania, what, about 60 miles away?
Yeah, it's about 60 miles from Philadelphia. And which I find myself living in Philadelphia just as much, too, you see.
Well, thanks again for being here today on Fresh Air. And let me give some of the information about what you're playing this weekend. That'll be as part of the first annual, that'll be part of the Sunnybrook Jazz Festival in Pottstown. And it starts Friday. On Friday evening, Count Basie plays. On Saturday evening, Al Gray and the other players that he has mentioned. And also as part of the festival, Al Gray will be awarded the first annual Sunnybrook Achievement Award from the mayor of Pottstown, Ed Jamieson. And here's a phone number, 326-6400, that you can call to inquire more about the events of the jazz festival. Oh, and also, the Arlen Sailor Orchestra plays as part of the jazz with Tex Windham, and some of the players in the Arlen Sailor Orchestra include Stan Shaw, Peter Leach, Mike Gray, Don Patterson, Joe Sutler, Don Wilson, Frankie Scott, and Gerald Wiggins on the bass. Well, it's about 20 minutes to 4 o'clock, and you're listening to Fresh Air. My name is Danny Miller. I'm sitting in for Terry Gross, who's on the third day of her vacation. And we're also in the third day and the final day of an important, very, very critically important fundraiser that National Public Radio is now holding to save National Public Radio, to save the programs All Things Considered, Morning Edition, the performance programming of National Public Radio, and all the other NPR programs. And we are asking NPR listeners, our listeners in Philadelphia, to join other listeners throughout the nation who are pledging what they can to National Public Radio. And we now have phone volunteers in our music studio waiting to hear from you. And being that today is the last day, we hope that you can call now before All Things Considered happens, actually, because sometimes it's difficult to get through during All Things Considered. So here's a phone number for you. If you would take a minute to call, 923-1234. That's 923-1234 for the National Public Radio Drive to Survive campaign, which is now on its last day, and now this is the last afternoon that you can make your call. In about 20 minutes, I'll be speaking with Ray Fielding, who has been involved in the film industry for about 30 years, and one of his very notable involvements has been with Francis Ford Coppola and the Zoetrope Studios. He's been a special effects consultant for Coppola, working on films like The Black Stallion, Apocalypse Now, and One from the Heart, and he'll be speaking with us at 4 o'clock. Well, right now we're going to switch musical directions and hear from the Ken Tucker Archives, and today Ken's review is on Alex Chilton.